Starfox Week continues, and today we have a very exciting special guest joining us. And this is amazing. We have Eduardo joining us today.
Hello, Eduardo.
You are the level designer, or level design director, sorry, on Starlink Battle for Atlas. And we're here to talk about Starlink as it relates to Star Fox Week. But before we do that, we just have a fun story of how the three of us ended up meeting each other, working together. Wow. It's very, I think it's very serendipitous. So we want to talk about that a little bit too. But welcome, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm following the podcast, like going over all of the episodes. Since we started working together, I started looking into the podcast. I didn't realize you had a podcast. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I get to, you know, enjoy talking to you during our during our meetings, but also, you know, listening a little bit more about a full circle. Yes, about games. And that I don't have time to play. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Well, you're very busy because you're working on something incredibly cool. So, you know, you have just the most amazing resume working at all of these amazing game studios and doing all these cool, working on all these cool games. But you're doing something even cooler now. You're working on your own game. So tell us about, there's a big logo right behind your head.
Yes, Reply All.
Yes, the game that you're working on now, keeping you very busy. So tell us all about that.
Yeah. I was working on another project at the time when the idea came up. I think this is like 2023, I want to say. And I can't take the credit for the original idea. Like it's one of those internet things, right? Like so I hadn't seen before, but then when I saw it, I saw the sentence, email is turn-based combat. And I laughed. I thought that was so funny. And, you know, I went to sleep with that idea, like email is turn-based combat. Yeah, that's, you know, why is there no game where email is turn-based combat? And but Reply All, is a turn-based game where email is turn-based combat. It's a card game, is a deck builder. And you build your replies out of the cards that you have in your hand. And you're trying to be as effective as possible in winning the conversation. You know, so sometimes you have to be a little bit aggressive. Sometimes you have to be a little bit defensive and, you know, maybe a little bit passive aggressive.
It's awesome. And it's such an interesting take on a life that we have all lived. I think it just like deeply touched us of like, oh, yes, this is something that's really going to connect with people, which is why we're so happy to be involved. And it's been such a joy to work with you and work on the project. Yeah. But before Reply All, you worked at Ubisoft. And like that's Krista said, you were the level design director on Starlink. And we're just so curious because it is Star Fox Week. And Starlink has this incredible Star Fox integration. How did these two things ever come together?
Oh, so we were working in. I joined the project before, obviously a couple of years before it got announced. But after the team had already landed on the core idea of the Toys to Life, or the we wouldn't call it Toys to Life, or we have it they landed on this core idea of assembling your own ships, and it felt so good of like putting pieces together and changing the ship. It was very playful, and that's when the whole thing started. You know, fast forward a couple of years, we are ready to announce the game. It's E3. We have like Matt Rose and Laurent Melville was creative director on the project. Matt was the producer on the project. They go, there is a trailer reveal of Starlink. And then I think at that time, Nintendo comes in and has a like behind closed door meetings with people, and then they show the project, right? Like, hey, we want to it's you're trying to put the game on the platform. You're trying to, you know, like talk to your distributors, and they come in, and they some people from Nintendo come in. You know, they see the game, they like the game, and go out. And then some more people come, and then they were like, oh, there's more Nintendo people that are coming in, and I think the game is, and that goes all the way up, I think, to Regis, and then he comes in and says, like, love the game. And then, you know, Matt and Laurent go to Japan. And I think at that point is like, hey, like, I think this opportunity is bubbling up. Everybody in the team loves the franchise. I mean, I played the first Star Fox game on the Super Nintendo. I didn't have the following consoles, but I remember having my mind absolutely blown away by that game on the, like, it was 3D on the Super Nintendo. It was just like this unknown thing. It's unknown technology that they had a special chip for it, you know, like there was to allow it to run and to allow it to run 3D things. So I guess what it would be like an equivalent of a graphics card inside the cartridge itself. The game the franchise was also very loved by everybody in the team. Quick concept art was made. Like, we already had designs for the ship, and we were thinking, you know, how can we integrate this? Had some brilliant industrial designers working on it, and some brilliant 3D artists working on the team, and then say, hey, let's try to bring this this life. As you say, like, as you know, like, 3D printing was a big part of the process of development of this game, you know, prototypes and things like that. There were many, many, many prototypes that were made for all of the ships. And then by the time when this opportunity appeared, there was already this idea of transforming. There was already a workflow for transforming an idea into a ship. And so they applied that to the R-Wing. Let me see if I can do a little thing here.
Magic.
I am going to disappear.
You're magical.
There we go.
In my
incredible room.
Wow.
I recently moved rooms, but and the only bit of stuff that I still have put out is this. But, like, look, I have the R-Wing right here.
So cool.
This is the shipped version, obviously, then the version that was sent out to Nintendo with Laurent and Matt was the initial one. But they got, like, I think already on the prototype version, there was already of this idea of, you know, like, making the things work, like these bits that they convert, they change, right? Mm-hmm. They're very, very respectful to the original IP. And here's a tiny little fox. They fit in the cockpit. And so, yeah, it's so great. And the ships are great. They're, like, great to play with. There was also the idea of the size of them. They also fit on top of the controller.
Yeah.
Right.
Amazing. The parts, the interchangeable parts. Yeah. And then you have that, the magic moment of, like, oh, and then that gun is now in the game somehow magically, which was just an incredible thing. And then even playing with the ship on top of the controller, like, it just felt kind of good.
It was neat. Yeah.
It was really cool. It was a very visceral experience.
So you had a lot of fans on the team already. And I think that absolutely, like, shows. Shines through.
Yeah.
Like, so many people have said, like, yeah, this feels very much like a proper Star Fox experience. But did the team have to do some sort of additional, like, crash course on the series of, like, no, we need to know everything about this? Like, once that thing was like, yeah, we're doing it, like, what was the next immediate step to, like, really get ready?
So one, I think first they needed to make sure that the characters integrated well within the design of the existing designs of the characters in the world, right? And at the same time, had to be very respectful to the original IP. We didn't want to reinvent Fox. We wanted to integrate Fox and be as respectful to the IP as it is. So there was a lot of work that happened with Nintendo on the back and forth on approval of concepts. And so there was a lot of communication that happened there and a lot of validation of, hey, this is what the story that we're trying to tell. These are the dialogues. This is the type of things that Fox is going to say. You know, like, and okay, so it, does this fit with character? You know, but a lot of the things just came back, you know, like, yep, that's okay. That's okay. Because the team that was working on it, you know, like the, all the narrative team and the creative direction and the art, folks, we're doing their homework before actually going in and say, hey, yeah, like we don't want to like, oh, this is not like, oh, we're going to get Fox and they're going to make our own version of Fox, right? Like it happens a lot with when you're working with additional IPs, and but Fox was integrated working with Nintendo, and one of the most like beautiful moments for the team, like I was everybody crying at the reveal, like the 2018 E3, right? Like, so the game was initially revealed in 2017. We didn't talk much about it, so otherwise that other than behind closed doors and to get that sense of what the game was. And then in 2018, they actually granted Miyamoto with the R-Wing on stage, and this was like a fanboy moment for me and a lot of people. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. It is such an honor to work on a game and have like a legend hold part of your work in their hands, right? Yeah, and it was a great moment. And we got like I loved worked in Starlink. I feel so privileged because we have had like lots of these opportunities to meet with people and to have like we even met Chris Hadfield, which is a very famous astronaut here, Canadian astronaut that we were talking about the wonders of exploring space, and so I got to meet an astronaut as well, and Miyamoto got to hold the R-Wing and. Yeah, so it was a great project to work on. And on top of that, it was super fun developing it. It was super fun working on the project itself.
Yeah. Seems like in that era, Mr. Miyamoto was making a lot of Ubisoft developers cry.
He was an especially cry
for. True, right?
It is amazing because, you know, Star Fox, out of a lot of games that Nintendo has, you know, partnerships with other studios with or you know, has... other, you know, sort of other spinoff projects with Star Fox is truly one of Mr. Miyamoto's like babies, like Pikmin, Star Fox, you know, that is sort of, he holds that those franchises so close to his heart. So it's an incredible moment, I think, when, you know, you're getting that kind of feedback from someone who, obviously Mr. Miyamoto, who, you know, the series just means so much to him, and he's holding the R-Wing on stage in his hands. And so it's kind of this like very emotional, like full circle moment. Everybody is holding baby Star Fox very respectfully in their arms. And it's really great that, you know, it was entrusted to your team, and you guys did such a good job, like, you know, being really respectful and caring of that. And then that was kind of reciprocated from the Nintendo side as well. So that's great.
Yeah, and I think in terms of gameplay, it was a perfect match as well, right? Because we were a space game, but a lot of our planetary explorations have to happen on the ground in a sort of hover movement, which also matched what the experience of a lot of Star Fox games are, right? Like you're in a sort of a hover state, and then you know, do barrel rolls, and it's like, oh, I gotta do a barrel roll. And we had a lot of gameplay connection with what a Star Fox game has, and we did our best to sort of be respectful and make that integration feel seamless and fun. Because also you got to see it happens halfway through development, right? Like we had our alpha at that time, and not exactly, I can't quite place the timing. I don't know. It was we were working before the reveal. We were working around 2017. So in between these 12 months of E3 2017 and E3, all of these conversations and these moments have happened. And in the development team, you have to understand how you're going to integrate those missions, how you're going to create those missions, how does it integrate and play along with the existing content, right? Like there is existing narrative content. When is the appropriate time for Fox to show up in the game? And you want this to be as early as possible, because especially if you're in the Nintendo platform, where Fox is available, you want to have that experience right away, right? Like you want to land and so how do we get Fox integrated in a seamless way on a game that is already written and already designed, and missions are designed and the flow is a design? How do we land that in bright and early? And that's always like a challenge. And so we did put a lot of effort into making sure that experience felt cohesive, right?
Yeah, I'm sure on one hand it was so exciting to be like, oh my gosh, we can do this. But then on the other hand, like you were saying, like you were already well into development. And I'm sure at some point it was like, oh, we have to actually find a way to fit this in and make it work for our schedule. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more of just like the nature of the collaboration with Nintendo? Were they mostly just kind of reacting to materials that you were sending? Were they contributing ideas of their own? I'm just so curious how that worked out.
Yeah, I think in that sense, the drafts and the concepts and the first drafts of scripts, they were sent to Nintendo and say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing with the story. This is where we're going to integrate. This is what's happening with the story. So, and they would feedback. So there was a back and forth on that, and say, hey, yeah, that's a good approval. That's a good process, and then offer changes and offer like feedback on what better fit the franchise and what better fit the design overall, right? So there was a lot of collaboration that happened there. Yeah,
awesome.
When you were talking about how it was so, it fits so well to have Star Fox sort of integrated into this space exploration game. Like it just kind of, the pieces already sort of fit together. When you were thinking through, how to just kind of blow that concept out, were there must-haves like in your head where it's like, we have to do this in this game or else we will have regrets or something like that? Like what was like some must-haves that you were like, this is, we got to do this.
So a few things, and I can't really take a lot of credit for this, because Laurent, like the creative director, he was I think the biggest Star Fox fan, which helps a lot. So he understood what needed to be integrated in a way that it made the game feel like, and that the experience feel like a Star Fox, and like all the way to like the types of sound, and like this, the sound of the R-Wing needs to feel like you're shooting the projectiles with the R-Wing, and so all of those items, the barrel roll has to feel like a Star Fox game. I actually don't remember if we had barrel rolls before Star Fox. So this was a thing that was integrated, was a must have. Memory eludes me a little bit, but I think like barrel roll was definitely something that was a requirement. And even if we did have, we probably did some improvement on it to match the experience better. So this idea also of having a team, right? Like that was that the Starlink team it integrated the Fox team, you know, like a Pepe, and then they came in together, right? So they it had to feel like, hey, like these teams are joining forces, and so those are pretty pretty important aspects that needed to be included into the game. Yeah,
there's so many cool things in Starlink that it's like I would love to see this in a proper Star Fox game one day. Like, you know, I am always like a sucker for being able to fly from space through the atmosphere into a planet. But you also told us a really cool story about how, you know, the planets are all like spherical. You can fly around, and that was an important thing for you. And like, what was the kind of testing that went into like, yeah, this is the right size for what a planet should be? Like how hard was it to actually realize these ideas?
It was impossibly hard.
Maybe that's why we haven't seen it.
it's a funny story because I, as a level design director, right? Like one of my first jobs, one of my first tasks was to actually work out what how big space should be. And space is infinite, right? Like it's like, hey, how? and I had many sleepless nights thinking about the size of space, and how small you feel in comparison to the universe. But I was thinking about ambition and how we can make a solar system. Like first it was like the galaxy wasn't too big. Like in the solar system, how many planets do you put in the solar system? Let's say that we make a solar system more or less like ours, because there is a lot of things that, you know, that you can get out of a relatedness of being able to put in your head as a player, right? Like you put in your head what a solar system should look like. And for us, it's like, oh, we have 9 planets in our solar system. So we couldn't deviate too much. It was like, we couldn't make a solar system with like 27 planets. And because that's not what our, even though there probably are some stars out there that host 27 planets around them, but like what our brains are understand as a size of a planet, or like a size of a solar system. And then there was the question of the size of a planet, and it's like, okay, so what's the desire was that we could circumnavigate the planet. That was the first thing. It's like, okay, so we want to go around the planet. How long does it take for you to go around the planet, and how fast do you need to move to actually go around the planet? And some quick math and some experimentation, and looks like, hey, it's just going to take, you know, at the current speed that we have, and if we make a planet, let's not be ambitious, let's not put the planet like a Earth-sized planet, let's just go smaller and say it's a moon-sized planet, and it'd take 23 days to go around, and it's like, oh wait, that's at our air speed, right? Like, so imagine like if you're a jet fighter and you're flying in and you're making it feel like you're flying as a speed of a jet fighter, going around the moon would take like something like 23 days. I'm like, don't quote me on that number, the exact numbers. I did have the exact numbers. I can't quite recall, but it was just like, oh my gosh, like you can't, like not even a day of circumnavigation is like, we want to circumnavigate. How fast? And then Laurent was like, oh, you need to be able to circumnavigate the planet in about, you know, 2 to 5 minutes at most. And I'm like, oh, okay, 2 to 5 minutes. Let's put some math into the works. And then there's a lot of game design that goes in. It's just like, let's make some spreadsheets. And we shrunk the size of a planet down. So then we ended up having small planets that were We had a range before. It was like, oh, we have a small planet that has a 1.5 kilometer radius, like, you know, like a sphere has a 1.5 kilometer radius all the way up to 5, which would be large planets. And they already have like sizable difference. And then supporting those different sizes was a lot on our team. So we ended up coming back down to a 3.5 kilometer radius. More or less. And it's like, okay, so 3.5 kilometer radius, what does that give us? That gives us a sphere that in terms of surface area is about 65 square kilometers, which is the size of a Far Cry map.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, we can make a Far Cry map. We're Ubisoft. We know how to make a something that is size of a Far Cry map. So, but we are a team that was a fraction of the size of a big Ubisoft project. We're a smaller team. Like it was still a relatively big team, but it was a smaller team. And it was, we wanted to make 7 of those, right? So it's like, we need 7 Far Cry levels that you can circumnavigate through, you know, deep breath and, you know, a lot of, investigation on how we make processes that are efficient. And that's a good thing about like working on that project is that we managed to do a lot of things that would have been unthinkable. Because we were smaller and leaner, I think we were able to be very quick on our feet and come up with ideas and solutions to actually populate the world with content. Even though we can, you know, handcraft every single bit of it, when we got to the size of the planet was too small. You put a camera, you put the ship on top of it, and you could see the world rolling down from you because it's like you're in the do I have a sphere? Do I have this like thing here? So if you put a triangle here, this is what it felt like. It's like, where is the horizon? The horizon is rolling down from you, and so we had to come up with something that made the planet feel big, even though it was smaller, right? Like even though it was much much smaller than the regular planet, our radius was 3.5 kilometers in radius. Earth is 40,000 kilometers in radius. Something like So imagine like I couldn't even imagine like filling a whole Earth of content. That's
so it's so daunting.
I'm pretty sure someone is going to do it out there.
So I guess our last question, you know, there are so many cool ideas introduced for Starlink, you know, specific to Star Fox. I guess if you had to pick one thing that was in Starlink that could maybe be included in a future Star Fox game, like what would be most exciting for you if you had to pick one thing from Starlink?
The fact that you feel very free in Starlink, I think without like compromising the mechanics of how the ship flies, is the thing that I would bring to Star Fox game, to the Star Fox experience, right? Like, okay, like it's that sense of being able to go anywhere and for the freedom of having an open world and then just looking up to the sky and then shooting up and then breaking through the atmosphere and you're suddenly in space and then you're flying around and then you're going in and landing on the planet that is being squished so you can see it.
Yeah. There's just this tantalizing sense of like, oh, this bigger scope is possible for the series that we just haven't seen realized in the main games. And but it's like it can happen.
It's a little bit of an existential crisis because of the fact that the game has sort of a space exploration theme. So yeah. I don't know. It might be just kind of a human nature thing too. Like when you put a game in front of someone that's like, you're going to get in a cool ship and explore the vastness of the universe. You're like, well, then you better let me do that. You better let me do, and then feel like, you know, you were talking about like these planets need to feel a certain, you can't just look at a tiny planet and see the horizon line. That does not give people the sense of vastness and wonder. So they have an opportunity to like pay that off somehow, but they have not done it yet. But it's
back in the day when I used to play, I was always big on space games. So I'd play TIE Fighter 2, and it was one of my favorite space games. And I remember seeing planets on the skybox, right? And then trying to fly towards them. I'm like, I wonder if like, and no, they're just skybox, right? Like you're just moving some float number on the on the background. It's like how far you get. So you leave everything very far behind. Like, wonder how close to the planet can I get? And like paying off that fantasy of like going, oh, I want to go there, and I want to go there, I want to go there. I think this was very important for us, and I think it's very important for space games in general. It's just this feeling that you're able to just go anywhere, right? Like the freedom of going anywhere. And with Starlink was like going anywhere, both on the ground, you know, having the freedom to skim the surface like a very like speedy hovercraft, and then fly like a fighter jet, and then break through the atmosphere and be a spaceship, like a fighter spaceship. So it's exactly what you said, right? Like when you put someone in the cockpit of a spaceship, you create a certain fantasy of what that being a pilot, like a spaceship pilot, is. And part of the job of a game developer is to pay off that fantasy, right? Like you give this people these expectations, and that's what you want to do, right? Like that's one something that I want to do with Reply All, right? Like say that turn-based combat, you know, email is turn-based combat, and we should definitely pay off that fantasy, right? Like we should actually go like, yeah, no, I know exactly what this is, because I have been through the whole process of being in a corporate world and replying to emails, to bosses, to middle managers, and, you know, and trying to navigate that. So it's about fulfilling that promise that you made for the players, right?
Yeah. Amazing. Incredible. Wow. That is so cool. I can't, the serendipitous nature of how this all came to be, how we met you and how we get to be so lucky to work on Reply All. And so we're doing the marketing for Reply All. We can't be more happy about that. And then to have this fun other thing that, that we get to talk about, to celebrate, you know, this new Star Fox.
Star Fox week, no less.
It's so incredible. The world, doesn't the universe work in such wonderfully mysterious ways? This is why, as humans, we want to explore the vastness of space to understand our place in the universe, I think. Yeah. But thank you so much, Ed. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
So great. We loved it. All right, everybody, we are going to be continuing on with the fun of Star Fox Week. So stay with us. We are back tomorrow with a new video, and we'll see you guys later. Bye.